Say good morning to each here this morning. Count it a privilege to be here to visit Jeff and see where his home away from home is. Appreciate the hospitality that we are experiencing thus far. I have a message this morning to share that can tend to be controversial, but it can be tend to be kind of a touchy subject, if you know what I'm saying. And people can get kind of riled up sometimes, and a little bit, their hackles tend to rise a little bit, if you know what I'm saying. But as I hear through Jeff a little bit about Cornerstone, I think it's a message that could apply to Cornerstone. And I don't think I ask you, Nelson, what time do you typically close? Whenever. Okay. That's fine. I have quite a number of points. I hope you can bear with me. If you want to turn to Exodus 18, that's where I would like to begin reading. And while you're turning there, I want to clarify just a couple things. I said a couple of those things to get your attention, but I do have a number of points this morning, but I do not intend to keep you late. And from what I hear from Jeff about the church and the congregation at Cornerstone, it reminds me an awful lot of the church and the families at Lenawee. I'd like to preach this morning on the subject of criticism, constructive or destructive. And I don't know what went through your minds when I said some of those things about maybe preaching a long time and that this congregation needs this subject. I don't know what went through your mind, but I know what would have, by default, tended to go through my mind if there was a visitor that came to Lenawee and said those things. Right away, my default tendency would have been like, okay, wait a minute here. Who is this fellow that thinks he knows that we need this message? And he has the audacity to say he's going to go late, of all things. Right away, I have him marked and flagged in my mind. I'm wondering who this is. Maybe you can't relate. That's fine if you can't. But that would have been my tendency to start criticizing before I even knew much of anything. Let's read in Exodus 18. I want to begin reading in verse 13. It came to pass on the morrow that Moses sat to judge the people, and the people stood by Moses from the morning unto the evening. And when Moses' father-in-law saw all that he did to the people, he said, What is this thing that thou doest to the people? Why sittest thou thyself alone, and all the people stand by thee from morning unto even? And Moses said unto his father-in-law, Because the people come unto me to inquire of God. When they have a matter, they come unto me, and I judge between one and another. And I do make them know the statutes of God and his laws. And Moses' father-in-law said unto him, The thing that thou doest is not good. Thou wilt surely wear away both thou and this people that is with thee, for this thing is too heavy for thee. Thou art not able to perform it thyself alone. Hearken now unto my voice. I will give thee counsel, and God shall be with thee. Be thou for the people to Godward, that thou mayest bring the causes unto God. And thou shalt teach them ordinances and laws, and shalt show them the way wherein they must walk, and the work that they must do. Moreover, thou shalt provide out of all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place such over them to be rulers of thousands and rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties and rulers of tens. And let them judge the people at all seasons. And it shall be that every great matter they shall bring unto thee, but every small matter they shall judge. So shall it be easier for thyself, and they shall bear the burden with thee. If thou shalt do this thing, and God command thee so, then thou shalt be able to endure. And all this people shall also go to their place in peace. So Moses hearkened to the voice of his father-in-law and did all that he had said. And Moses chose able men out of all Israel and made them heads over the people, rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, and rulers of tens. And they judged the people at all seasons. The hard causes they brought unto Moses, but every small matter they judged themselves. And Moses let his father-in-law depart. And he went his way into his own land. Now, if you can, flip over to the book of Numbers, Numbers chapter 12. I'm going to read these two accounts, and then we'll reference them as we go through the message somewhat. Numbers chapter 12, verse 1. It says, And Miriam and Aaron spake against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married. For he had married an Ethiopian woman. And they said, Hath the Lord indeed spoken only by Moses? Hath he not spoken also by us? And the Lord heard it. Now the man Moses was very meek, above all the men which were upon the face of the earth. And the Lord spake suddenly unto Moses and unto Aaron and unto Miriam, Come out, ye three, unto the tabernacle of the congregation. And they three came out. And the Lord came down in the pillar of the cloud and stood in the door of the tabernacle and called Aaron and Miriam, and they both came forth. And he said, Hear now my words. If there be a prophet among you, I, the Lord, will make myself known unto him in a vision and will speak unto him in a dream. My servant Moses is not so, who is faithful in all mine house. With him will I speak mouth to mouth, even apparently, and not in dark speeches. And the similitude of the Lord shall he behold. Wherefore, then, were ye not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? And the anger of the Lord was kindled against them, and he departed. And the cloud departed from off the tabernacle. And behold, Miriam became leprous, white as snow. And Aaron looked upon Miriam, and behold, she was leprous. And Aaron said unto Moses, Alas, my Lord, I beseech thee, lay not the sin upon us, wherein we have done foolishly, and wherein we have sinned. Let her not be as one dead, of whom the flesh is half consumed when he came out of his mother's womb. And Moses cried unto the Lord, saying, Heal her now, O God, I beseech thee. And the Lord said unto Moses, If her father had but spit in her face, should she not be ashamed 7 days? Let her be shut out from the camp 7 days, and after that let her be received in again. And Miriam was shut out from the camp 7 days, and the people journeyed not till Miriam was brought in again. And afterward the people removed from Hazeroth and pitched in the wilderness of Paran. Now in these two accounts, there was a need, there was advice or criticism, if you will, given, but the end result was totally different. What makes the difference? And I find it interesting. So, what made the difference between Jethro approaching Moses and giving him advice or criticism? Basically, in the way we use the word criticism, he gently, kindly, but he criticized Moses for how he was relating to the people. What makes the difference between that kind of situation and the situation that we just read about where Aaron and Miriam criticized Moses? The interesting thing is, to my knowledge, the word criticize or criticism is, in and of itself, is not found in the Bible. I stand to be corrected, but I don't think it is. But there are a couple words that are very synonymous with this. Just for frame of reference, in Exodus 16:7 it says, And in the morning, then ye shall see the glory of the Lord, for that he heareth your murmurings against the Lord. And what are we that ye murmur against us? Murmur has the idea to be obstinate, especially in words, to complain. Have you ever heard, we don't use the word a lot in today's language, but in Scripture you hear the term busybody, meaning overseeing others' affairs, someone that meddles. We find that word used in 1 Timothy 5:13. And withal they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house. And not only idle, but tattlers also, and busybodies, speaking things which they ought not. We have the word chide used in Exodus It says, wherefore the people did chide with Moses. We have the word complain used a lot in the Old Testament. We talked about it in our Sunday school lesson this morning. Lamentation says, wherefore doth a living man complain? Complain has the idea of murmuring as well. Just negative, discontent, murmuring, complaining, chiding. You kind of get the picture. There's a story of a man who had a mule. And he was getting frustrated with the high cost of grain and hay. And he had a neighbor that had a woodworking shop. And so he had all the sawdust that he could want or need free of charge. And so he decided he was going to try to wean his mule off of hay and grain and getting trained and weaned to eat sawdust. And so he ever so gradually changed the mule's diet to becoming more and more sawdust and less hay and grain. And he almost had the mule trained and the mule died. Now we can go into a long discussion about why the mule died. There's probably some fairly obvious reasoning. But now just let that in the back of your mind for a minute. Thinking back to this whole subject of criticism, somebody has said, I don't know who it was, somebody has said that criticism is something we can avoid easily by saying nothing, doing nothing, and being nothing. Sounds about as realistic as feeding mules sawdust, doesn't it? In other words, it's not possible. And sometimes I can tend to feel that way. Well, I don't enjoy when people criticize me, so probably you don't enjoy when I criticize you, so we're just not going to go there. We're just not going to go there. It doesn't work that way, okay? That's not reality. It's not real to life. Someone else has said that constructive criticism is when I criticize you. Destructive criticism is when you criticize me. I can relate to that, but that's not real either, is it? I want to quickly look at four things that typically accompany a critical spirit or negative criticism. Okay, I'm just going to give them quickly. Number one type of thing that typically accompanies a negative critical spirit is the pity me attitude. There is an account, and I'm not going to read it, but in 1 Samuel 18, I'm going to turn there quickly just to make sure that I have the right account. But in 1 Samuel 18, we have the account when David and Jonathan were best of friends, and the relationship between David and King Saul was deteriorating rapidly. And they had gone to battle, and when they returned from battle, the women came out of all the cities of Israel, singing and dancing to meet King Saul with tabrets, with joy, and with instruments of music. And the women answered one another as they played and said, Saul hath slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. And Saul was wroth. And he said, they have ascribed unto David 10,000s, and unto me they have ascribed but thousands. And what can he have more but the kingdom? And get the next verse. And Saul eyed David from that day forward. When you or I or anyone else has the attitude of pity me, that I'm in so much worse shape than everybody else, it's a perfect seedbed for negative criticism to come forth. Number two, another thing that typically accompanies a critical spirit is when we have the mentality of, or the idea that there's a judgment before a trial. And what I mean by that is, have you ever had, or have you ever seen it portrayed, the person with this kind of a negative criticism or critical spirit will often know why so-and-so got the new vehicle they did, or they will know why their children act the way they do in school. They will know why so-and-so wasn't home when we stopped in to visit them. And they make a judgment call and they criticize, and there hasn't even been a fair trial. They don't even know the facts. That's a perfect seedbed for negative criticism. Number three, another thing that can happen is when people use concern to mask what is really enviousness or jealousy. We read the account of Aaron and Miriam, how that they criticized Moses. I think the deeper issue was is there was some jealousy there. And they were masking the real need under criticism. Again, perfect seedbed for negative criticism to come. Number four, another thing that typically can accompany a critical spirit is when there is the fear of failure and or inadequacy. And this one here, I tend to not know for sure how all to portray that, but I still think it's true. But if you think about the example of when God called Moses to go lead his children out of Egypt. And there's many ways that I can relate to Moses. And I can tend to be a little softer on Moses, but Moses said, I can't talk, I can't speak, I'm not able to do this. I'm not qualified. And God said, I will do this and this and this to show, yeah, but I just can't. And it went on, and finally God got angry. And I think if we're honest with ourselves, that whole, it's a self thing, okay? That's what the seedbed, that's what brings the fear of failure and or inadequacy. But that can be, again, a perfect seedbed for criticizing and being negative and just being a negative critical spirit. Now, I'd like to look quickly at four things that typically accompany a kind and concerning spirit. And then we'll get into a little bit of a practical side of things. But number one is that they will typically ask questions from a sincere, caring heart. Or, if you will, they will engage in discussion before criticizing. You don't have to turn there, but think about Jesus and the woman taken in adultery in John 8. Jesus said, "Where are thine accusers? Hath no man condemned thee?" Jesus knew this whole story, and it was a messy situation. And it seemed like it would have been perfect and totally legitimate for that woman to be criticized. And it would have been factual, and it would have been true. But Jesus engaged in conversation with her, and Jesus said, "You know, where is everybody that accused you?" And she said, "Well, they're all gone." And he said, "Well, neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more." Think about Jesus and the woman at the well. And they had that conversation about the living water and where to worship and so on and so forth. And he, again, it was a messed up situation. But he communicated with her, and he, from a kind, sincere, caring heart, wanted to know where she was, and in through all that, it helped her to understand herself and where she was. I think about Jesus and the disciples in John 14, especially Philip, and how that Jesus had been with them for however long it was, and they still weren't catching on to what Jesus' plan was and to what Jesus had in mind. But again, if you have time, you can read that, how that Jesus engaged his disciples and talked to them, communicated with them to be able to ultimately help them understand the whole situation. But most times I find it so much easier just to criticize instead of trying to communicate, ask questions, engage in discussion before criticizing. Number two, second thing that typically accompanies a kind, concerning spirit is simply the golden rule. The way They treat others the way they want to be treated. Much, much more could be said, but it is so simple. When you're in a position and you feel ready, you feel tempted to give people a piece of your mind, you feel ready to set something straight, just remember to relate to it the way you would want to be related to. Number three, it's marked by honesty and clarity or frankness. I think about the account, the feet washing story in John 13. And Jesus began to make preparations to wash your feet. And Peter said, no, you're not washing my feet. And Jesus said, yes. Or rather, he said, if I don't wash your feet, you have no part with me. Then Peter said, well, then just, you know, not just my feet, but let's, you know, wash my whole body. And Jesus said, okay, wait a minute. That's your feet are clean, but I'm doing this, you know, for the... But Jesus was honest with him, and Jesus was clear, and Jesus was frank. And that, I think, always accompanies positive criticism. I think also of the story in Acts 18, where we have the man named Apollos that was teaching, and he was a little bit off on his teaching. And Aquila and Priscilla took him off to the side a little bit later and taught him, gave him, helped him to see what he was missing and where he was getting things twisted up a little bit. Again, it was honest, it was clear, and it was frank. And the fourth thing is that these kind of people are always seeking the other person's best interest. And it's so simple, but it's so difficult for me to really grasp, because you need to get on their level. You need to meet them on their turf, so to speak. You need to speak their language. Perfect example of that is obviously Jesus. How he related to the sinful. He related to the lepers. He related to the blind. He didn't shun them. He didn't criticize them. But rather, he got on their level and worked with them, ultimately for their good. It's an earmark of the kind and concerning spirit, or the positive criticism. Now, I have 6 points that I just simply call takeaways of criticism. There's just 6 things. They're very, very practical. They're not necessarily in order of importance or anything like that. Number one, no man is totally self-reliant. All of us need some help from our fellow man. Somewhere, sometime, somehow. Mark it down. If you don't think you ever need help, I hate to break it to you, but you're wrong. It's everyone. It's all of us. Romans 14:7 says, for none of us liveth to himself, and no man dieth to himself. 1 Corinthians 4:7, for who maketh thee to differ from another? And what hast thou that thou didst not receive? Now, if thou didst receive it, why dost thou glory as if thou hadst not received it? You know, we do need to listen. And sometimes I get this concept and this mindset that there must be something wrong with me if somebody has to come and give me advice or give me help. And the reality of it is that's probably true. There probably is something wrong with me. There is a lot wrong with me. But my point is that I don't think we should focus so hard on trying to avoid any type of situation where somebody may need to speak to us, because that's not, we're in this life. We need each other. Rather, if we can relate to it, well, let's go on to point number two. Our attitude towards the criticism and the giver of it has more to do with how we relate to it than the fact of whether it's true or not. And I say that because I believe it's true, not necessarily because I've accomplished that and I know from personal experience that it's true. That is difficult, for me at least, in my humanity, to look past the giver and just look at the criticism. There was a conversation once, during a conversation with Dr. Charles Fuller, and I don't know him personally, but a man's name came up who had been publicly attacking Dr. Fuller. Fuller said, "Yes, God bless him." Another man came up. Another man said, "You don't seem too upset, Dr. Fuller." And Fuller replied, "Why should I let someone else decide how I'm going to act?" There's a lot of truth in that. Why should we let someone else decide how we're going to act? We don't need to let somebody else's attitude or even their criticism. It gets kind of a fine line here, but if you know where I'm going with this, we don't need to allow that to affect and choose for us how we respond and choose our actions. If we can think about other people all being potential allies, if you know what I'm saying, if we can learn from all these other people's experiences, it can help us tremendously if we don't need to learn it all on our own. You see, I so often look at other people who criticize me as being in the other camp, their enemies. And somehow wait a minute. If we can have the mentality that you likely have something that I need and can benefit me, it's not a threat. It can be a help. Easier said than done. But our attitude towards the criticism and the giver of it has more to do with how we relate to it than the fact of whether it's true or not. Someone has said, if what they are saying about you is true, then mend your ways. If it isn't true, forget it and go on and serve the Lord. True, easier said than done. Someone else has said, it takes a great person to give sound advice tactfully, but it takes a greater person to accept it graciously. Number three, third takeaway about criticism. There are multiple ways of doing something right. You may have a dairy farmer that milks his cows twice a day, done it for years. You may have another dairy farmer, can be in the same community, that milks his cows three times a day. That's the best way to do dairy. There may be another one, and I'm not criticizing, that has it scheduled and penciled out so that he can milk his cows three times a day, but it's at a different time every day throughout the week so that when he gets to Sunday, it only happens twice on Sunday. All examples of the dairy farm, if I'm not mistaken, get their cows milked and receive a milk check. It could be an example of a carpenter crew where one crew has one person that is the cut man. He does all the cutting. Somebody else does this. Somebody else does this. It's as organized as clockwork. And another crew doesn't maybe do it quite that way. But both crews can get the house built or whatever they're building, and it can be done right. You may see somebody that leads singing and they wave their hand all over the air, it seems like, and the next person doesn't hardly do it, but both get the song led. Just because someone else does something differently than you does not mean that you have to criticize them. Nor does it mean that you have to change everything you are doing to exactly match another method. These things can be taken to extremes. I understand that. I hope you understand what I mean and where I'm coming from. Again, many times we can tend to feel threatened by how we perceive somebody else doing something. And so we feel one of our default first responses is to criticize them, or the second thing is sometimes we feel like we have to do it just like them to be able to be accepted, if you will, whatever. I don't think that's what it's all about. Yes, we can learn. We need to learn from other people, but there is different ways of doing something, and they can all both be right. Number four, by default, we see things through our lenses. And we excuse ourselves and criticize others. That's by default. I would go on to say that that is to our fault and that is to our shame. When the other fellow is despiteful, he's ugly. When you act that way, it's just your nerves. When the other fellow is set in his ways, he's obstinate. When you are, it's just firmness. When the other fellow spends a lot of money, he's extravagant. When you do, it's just generosity. When the other fellow picks flaws in things, he's cranky. When you do, you're just discriminating. When the other fellow says what he thinks, he's spiteful or judging. But when you do, you're just being frank. When the other fellow doesn't like your friend, he's prejudiced. But when you don't like his friend, you're simply showing that you are a good judge of human nature. I don't know where that came from. That's not original with me. But the way you were taught, the things you learned in your life, in your experience, your culture, all have a distinct tendency to make you who you are by default. That in itself isn't wrong. It's just how life works. The things that were taught in my home, the subjects that were avoided at the dinner table because of being proper, is maybe something totally different than what my wife's family was. Neither one are wrong. But the tendency is to view things through my lenses, and we have sort of tunnel vision sometimes, and it's natural. It's native. It's default. We tend to do that. And I'm not saying that the way we were brought up or our culture, if you will, those things aren't wrong. But the challenge is how we relate to it. And we need to realize that that doesn't give us a license to criticize somebody else doing something different. I'm not talking moral issues. I'm just talking practical life issues. Many times the tables can be turned against us just as easily. There's as many or more things that can be criticized in myself as what I tend to criticize in others. Once there was a young couple that got married. And one day he said to his wife, he said, "When are you going to start making pie filling like my mother made?" And she used a little play on words, but she said, "When are you going to start making the dough that my dad used to make?" You see, there's enough things in our own selves that there's really not a reason, justifiable reason, to pick everything apart in everybody else. And on more of a sober note, I wonder sometimes how many church problems, how many school problems could be avoided if we were willing to look at some things through some other people's lenses, if we could see things through other people's eyes. I wonder. Number five, we will be criticized and misunderstood at times in life. It's inevitable. Just as unrealistic as it is to feed a mule sawdust, it's unrealistic to totally avoid criticism. And the more influence you have in life, the more prone you are to this. I don't consider myself an old man, but back a number of years ago, there was the name Colin Powell in politics. And that name was floated as a potential possibility of running for president. And I'm sorry, I cannot tell you which term or what time, exactly what year that was. But he was suggested as running for president. And Colin himself gave this answer. He said, "Why would I want to be the president of the United States?" He said, When you're at the top of the pole, he said, the only thing people see is your negative traits. I think there's some truth in that. I thought that was interesting, coming from what I would just simply call mainstream or secular viewpoint. And we should not seek to be in a position where we never get criticized, because that's unrealistic, but rather relate to it and learn from it. I'm going to give you another little story that kind of illustrates this. A father and his son took a donkey to the market. The man sat on the beast and the boy walked. People along the way said, "What a terrible thing, a big strong fellow sitting on the donkey's back while the youngster has to walk." So the father dismounted and the son took his place. Soon onlookers remarked, "How terrible, this man walking and the little boy sitting." At that, they both got on the donkey's back, only to hear others say, "How cruel, two people sitting on one donkey." Off they came, but bystanders commented, "How crazy, the donkey has nothing on his back and two people are walking." Finally, they were both carrying the donkey. They never did make it to the market. There is a balance, because we read in Scripture that in the mouth of two or three witnesses shall every deed be confirmed. I'm just putting it in my own words. Okay, there is. So we have scriptures like that where we need the voice and the opinions of other people. And then we read in the book of James where it says a double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. I'm just going to simply say it like this. Being criticized is not a sin. How we relate to it is the acid test. Number 6. Believe the best in people. I know that's broad and that's simple in words. Very, very difficult in action. But can we give people some time? When you see a problem in someone, can we give them some time to see if they can see that themselves? Can we believe that when people criticize us, that they want what is best for us? You see, if people can see the need in their own mind and they can address it from their own decision and their own will, it will be so much more productive and so much more worthwhile than if I or you step in and, you know, really intimidate and belittle them for it. They can learn from it, yes, but can we afford to give them some time? The best way to help someone is to be in a position where you're able to help them. And this happens when there is a good relationship. And good relationships take time to build. And good relationships need to be built before there is a need of criticism. And interestingly enough, when good relationships are built, it's amazing how many of the potential needs for criticism kind of go away, because now we know them better. We know their heart. We know what their intent is. We know a lot more about why they did what they did, and we can understand it. I find it so interesting. Whenever you're with people, it's like this. People in Michigan aren't any different from people in New York in many ways. You can have a group of people, and you can see somebody that does or says something that's just a little bit, for lack of better words, it's kind of stupid. It just wasn't thought through. But because I know him, I know he did not intend in intentionally do something to hurt anybody or intentionally do something to be stupid. Because I know him. I know his heart. I know where he would... You get my point. Whereas if I'm in a totally unusual or different group and somebody does something like that, I can tend to write them off. It's like, how dumb? You can't think? You can't... But wait a minute. Before we get in their face, let's... Before you condemn someone, walk them out in his shoes. Somebody has said, great is the man who can accept criticism. Greater yet is he who welcomes it. But greatest of all is he who knows how to administer it in a spirit of love and sensitivity without causing pain and chagrin. And that can be summed up in the golden rule. Practice the golden rule when you're giving criticism. When we believe the best in people, and there is a need, in our opinion, we must relate to it as though they haven't seen or understood everything yet, not that they are being obstinate or rebellious. I think there's so many things that I have messed up in life. There's so many things I've made mistakes in. It can be a men's meeting that I speak my mind, and in all reality, it'd be very legitimate for some people to come and get in my face and call me to task over that. But I can relate and appreciate so much more when somebody comes and says, so what? Where were you coming from with that? And maybe my explanation, I'm not excusing if I would have said something in a wrong way, okay? But if we can communicate and if we can practice the golden rule, it helps us to understand each other and where we're coming from. And we can many times understand that maybe there was some ignorance involved and not rebellion. Big difference in a case like that. Familiar quote, familiar proverb, there is so much good in the worst of us and so much bad in the best of us that it ill behooves the best of us to criticize the rest of us. May God help us to be the kind of people that can humbly accept criticism and learn from it and thereby be a better person. And may God help us when giving criticism, to give it sincerely, in love, seeking the best in the other person. Let's kneel for prayer.